For the first time since Goldberg killed the Fiend, WWE got themselves some of that sweet Saudi money. It's been so long. This is your WWE Crown Jewel 2021 review. I am the Solemn Monster here with you for what was a very good show. In fact, I thought that this was easily the best of all the Saudi shows so far. Going back 3 years when they started them in 2018, this one is the one. You look at the card on paper, they stacked this one like a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam. They wanted to go in there, they wanted to deliver a big show to all the people of Saudi Arabia. Of course, they're only in year three, I guess it would be, of a 10-year contract. They want to make nice, and they gave the people a hell of a stacked card, but even some of the best stacked cards on paper don't always deliver, right? We've had WrestleManias that look great on paper, and they end up not being so good. I thought this show was very good. I thought it opened strong with the best match on the entire show, Hell in a Cell, Edge, Seth Rollins. They went in there. They did that stipulation proud. Finally, a Hell in a Cell match worthy of the stipulation. I don't ask for much, but those two guys went in there, and I think they knocked it out of the park. In between, you know, up until we got to the Universal title match in the main event, I thought really pretty much everything that we saw, save for maybe a couple of matches that were, you know, okay. I'm thinking of you, Queen's Crown. Aside from that, we had a bunch of good to very good matches, even the main event. You knew there wasn't going to be a title change. Universal Championship still belongs to Roman Reigns. He's going to wear that title on, I think, probably into WrestleMania at least. So I don't think that was much of a surprise coming into this show. I don't know that we really expected there to be a major title change for a show that really didn't have any major title changes. I thought they did good. That main event, look, I expected a screwy finish because we know they're going to bring it back. We know this is only the first time, the first of at least two matches that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar are going to have. You had to expect there would be some kind of a screwy finish involving Paul Heyman. That's the story they've been telling this entire time. It's all about Paul Heyman. Where does his allegiance lie? Is it with Brock? Is he swerving everybody? Is he still really with Brock? Or is he with Roman? And they played that story off in this match, and they kind of furthered it a little bit. They put a little wrinkle into the story tonight with that finish in the main event. So we're going to talk about all that stuff. Goldberg, who has not had a very sterling record in Saudi Arabia. In fact, the matches he's had in Saudi Arabia up to this point have been shit. Even Goldberg went in there tonight and had the best match of the three, I think it's three, that he has had in Saudi Arabia. Now, that's a very low bar. We're setting a very low bar. But even he went in there and had what I thought was a pretty decent match with Bobby Lashley, who I feel bad for. Yeah, if I feel bad for anybody coming out of this show, it's probably Bobby Lashley, because this guy was so dominant and so protected for so long. And he had what I thought was a very good run as WWE champion. And ever since he lost that title, it's just been this steady decline where he's just getting beaten and beaten and beaten. And now you ask yourself, now that he lost to Goldberg, where do they go from here with Bobby Lashley? I don't know. But we're going to run down this entire card here. We had a couple of late changes, actually, to this card. On the kickoff, they announced a no disqualification stipulation had been added. Now, this made me laugh my ass off. So on the kickoff show, they announced that Roman Reigns against Brock Lesnar is now going to be no disqualification for the Universal Championship, even though the contract had already been signed on TV. Now they're adding stipulations to the match. So they announced that. And they announced that Goldberg against Bobby Lashley, beyond being no holds barred, would now be falls count anywhere in the building. So these were a couple of pretty big changes, you would say, to two of the bigger matches on the card. Only for them to turn around later on that very same kickoff show and announce that Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar both, neither man, want a no disqualification stipulation to be added to their match. And so therefore, it would be a regular match, which is what it was up until the point that they said it was going to be no DQ. It was a regular match up until about 12 o'clock today. Or I'm sorry, not 12 o'clock, up until about 11 a.m. So they didn't want the stipulation, so it went back to being a regular match. Which means, basically, if you read between the lines, they were still trying to figure out what the finish of this match was going to be up until a few hours before this pay-per-view. You would think a match this big, they would have had this worked out before they even stepped on the plane to fly to Saudi Arabia. They would have a finish already worked out. Apparently not. They were trying to figure it out right up until the last minute. So that was something else, to be told that we have a stipulation, but now we don't. I got to give a major, major shout out. Before we get into any of these matches here, got to give a major shout out to the lonely one on Twitter. He is the person, he is the man responsible for holding up that Salamonster Sounds Off sign that I know a lot of you saw all throughout the pay-per-view tonight. There it is in all its glory. I had a different shot, but then I saw this in the main event. I said, this is the one I got to clip. There it is. Representing the podcast worldwide. You love to see it. Right behind the Tribal Chief, there it is, Salamonster Sounds Off. So thank you to the lonely one who clearly took my advice. He was preparing to bring something to the show for a long time, and I said, look, if you're going to bring a sign to the show, just make sure it stands out. Well, boom, there it is. That put a smile on my face. Even if I had missed it, I got so many messages from you guys, it would have been impossible for me to miss. So anyway, thank you to him for that. That was pretty incredible to see the Sound Off represented over in Saudi Arabia like that. Look, if you're bored at work, I've got you covered. For these next 90 minutes or so, I'm going to be with you here on a Thursday afternoon. I know some of you were probably working. You're probably sneaking in some Salamonster on your phone, hoping your boss doesn't see you, right? You're kind of risking it all to watch. First of all, I would say, why are you risking it all to listen to anything about Crown Jewel? But if you're going to risk it all, at least listen to me, because I got you covered here for this show. Zeke Jackson, thank you for becoming a Sound Off channel member. I spotted you out of the corner of my eye. So welcome, Zeke, to the Sound Off family. There was a kickoff show. I thought the kickoff show started at noon Eastern, and the main show started at 1 o'clock. So at about 10 a.m., imagine my surprise when I realized, oh shit, the kickoff show, which has a match on it, actually starts an hour earlier than I thought. So I had a scramble here, but there was a kickoff show with the Usos against Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander. It was non-title, of course, given that they are on separate brands. Benjamin worked over Jay's arm for a long time, and the Usos made their comeback. They got cheered like babyfaces. If you didn't know any better and you just watched this match, you would think that the Usos came into this match as just the white meat babyfaces. But I guess they have a lot of fans over in Saudi Arabia. So Jimmy got the hot tag, ran wild. He gave Cedric an ugly-looking Samoan drop, which Michael Cole referred to as a modified Samoan drop. I mean, you could pretty much add the word modified onto anything, right? Any kind of botch. If you fuck up a move, you just say, well, that was a modified version, right? If I have a shitty podcast, when the podcast is over, I can be like, well, that was a modified podcast. you just add the word modified onto anything, and it makes it okay. Shelton got a shot in on Jimmy. He reached in, nailed him. Cedric tried to finish it off with a brainbuster, but Jimmy kicked out. Jay hit the Uso splash to Cedric to pick up the win. So the Bloodline picks up a victory over the Hurt Business. Pretty standard stuff here from the Usos. I mean, it was good, but nothing really to sing home about. But that's what the kickoff is for. Right now, we start the main show. Pay-per-view opened with Edge against Seth Rollins in the 50th Hell in a Cell match in WWE history. Each of their first two matches were excellent, so I had high hopes here for the finale. And they did not disappoint. And also, this is your annual reminder that the Red Cell looks like shit. I'll keep saying it. The Red Hell in a Cell looks like absolute garbage. Thunder Knight has been a channel member for about 3 months now. Sound Off Superstar chiming in. Sweet Saudi Money 7, what's in the box, he says. Well, we'll have to work on subtitles for the next Saudi show. This was Sweet Saudi Money 6. Enough of this, as you can see from the artwork there. So I'll need to start soliciting suggestions from you guys for Sweet Saudi Money 7, which I'm sure will be coming probably early next year. Probably before WrestleMania. Well, maybe not. Where are we now? We're in October. Maybe. first quarter, maybe 2022. So each of their first two matches, like I said, were great. This one was no different. They had camels off to the side of the ramp, which was quite the sight to see as each man made his entrance. Jessica Carr was the referee. This was the first shot of a woman on this show, because, you know, they're always dressed differently here on these Saudi Arabia shows. And she had her referee shirt on with some long sleeves underneath, so no real surprise there. Edge brought a chair into the ring. He broke the bottom bar off from the chair. We've seen him do this in a lot of his recent matches and angles on TV where he'll break the bar off and use it in the crossface to choke out his opponent. So he broke the bottom bar off. He went for a crossface. Rollins avoided it, ended up with the bar, which he tried to drive into Edge's eye like a stake. Edge blocked it. Rollins drop-kicked Edge off the apron to the floor, and he went out after him. So they bring it back inside. Rollins has a steel chair. He's smashing it over Edge's back. Edge comes back with a crossface, and Rollins is scrambling. He's trying to scramble for the ropes, right? Even though I would assume here in a Hell in a Cell match that you would not be getting any rope breaks, but they have a shot of the metal bar that Edge had broken off earlier in the match. And it is laying within arm's reach of Seth Rollins. And so they have this great shot of Seth reaching over, and he grabs the bar. And, of course, he puts his thumb over the top of the bar, because you knew he was going to jam. Once I saw that, I knew he was jamming it into his eye. Right? You got to protect the guy. So he puts his thumb over it to protect Edge. And then he jabs Edge in the eye with the bar. And Edge lets go of the hold, and Rollins grabs a chair. He tosses it to Edge, who catches it. I thought he was going to give him a... Was it Van Terminator? Is that what he used to do with it? Was it the Van Terminator, Van Daminator? Instead, he punched the chair right back into Edge's face, and down goes Edge. Goes up top for a frog splash, hits the frog splash, only gets a near fall. Rollins goes to ringside. He pulls a table out from underneath the ring. Rollins gets back inside, puts Edge down with the Unprettier, which Michael Cole... referred to as Edge's own move. See, I learned something new tonight. I didn't know coming into the show that the Unprettier was Edge's move. I think Christian might have something to say about that. But according to Michael Cole, that was Edge's move. That's like when Owen Hart would go around saying that the sharpshooter was his before it was Bret's. Rollins goes up top for what looked like maybe he was going for a Phoenix Splash, which sadly did not work out very well earlier this morning in the G1 for Kota Ibushi, but we'll cover that on the podcast on Sunday. Before he could do anything, though, Edge comes over and he shoves Rollins off the top rope. This was my favorite spot of the whole, maybe my favorite spot of the whole event, because it looked fucking great. He shoves Rollins off the top rope, and Rollins collides into the side of the cage, bounces off the side of the Hell in a Cell, and crashes down through crashes down through a table that had been set up on the floor. So this whole sequence, top rope, shoved into the cage, bounces off, falls down, crashes through the table. Find a GIF, find a clip, go back and rewind it. This was a fucking great spot. This looked great. And honestly, you know, after I watched it, I thought, no exaggeration, that was probably the coolest looking table bump I think I've ever seen. I mean, I'm trying to think over in my mind one that I thought was cooler. But just in terms of how visually this came off, I mean, it looked cool as all fucking hell. I love that spot. Thankfully, Rollins didn't get hurt. He easily could have gotten hurt crashing down that way through the table. I mean, but everything seemed to be okay. So Edge brings the ring steps into the ring, and he hits an Edge-O-Matic onto them. Christian's move. The Edge-O-Matic must be Christian's move. Then he goes up top with a chair, comes off onto Rollins on the steps with a chair-assisted elbow drop. Edge goes for the spear. Rollins, though, catches him with a super kick at a pedigree for a near fall. Yeah, Quizzical One says pinball. That's actually a good way to describe it. It really was. He looked like a pinball. He looked like a pinball, ricocheting off the cage down through the table. So Edge comes back, and he hits Rollins with his own buckle bomb in the corner. Rollins bounces out of the corner. Edge hits the spear. for a near fall of his own. Edge brings a table in, but he also finds a ladder. And he brings the ladder inside, and he goes to whip Rollins into the ladder. Rollins reverses it, sends Edge into it instead. Seth sets Edge on the table, and he starts scaling the ladder. Edge recovers. He climbs the ladder as well. Edge goes to suplex him off. Rollins, though, cuts him off and hits a sunset bomb off the ladder through the table. So now Edge takes a bump through a table. So now they're one apiece. Rollins was looking for some more toys to play with. What can I use here? And he finds a chain, which he wraps around his boot. Chain-assisted super kick right to the face. Well, Edge is on his knees. Chain-assisted super kick right to the face. He goes for a chain-assisted curb stomp after that, but Edge grabs the chair. He turns the chair sideways, and Rollins crotches himself on the chair. Edge comes back. He uses the chain to choke out Rollins, and then he grabs a wrench. And he uses the wrench for a crossface. Rollins looked like he was seconds away from tapping out. And then Edge inexplicably releases the hold. He wants to punish this man in other ways. So he lets go of the hold. And Edge grabs a chair. He places it underneath Seth's head. And he hits the curb stomp onto the chair for the 1-2-3. Edge picks up the win. Edge got the WrestleMania pyro treatment when this was over with. This was all the opening match. I mean, the match itself, the pyro, you would think this was the main event of WrestleMania here. I thought this was a fantastic finale to a great trilogy of matches between Edge and Seth Rollins. This was a battle, as I said at the beginning, worthy of Hell in a Cell. Hell in a Cell has just become another event every year. We just had Hell in a Cell a few months ago. It's just become another show. It's just become another match. Hell in a Cell, in my opinion, was built, it was conceived of, going back to Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, for a feud, a blood feud, like this. Seth Rollins broke into the man's home, he stalked his family, who wasn't home at the time. That's the kind of shit that, you know, you're building to a big grudge match finale. And I thought they used the environment, especially on that table bump, the pinball spot, they used it very well. Like I said, I thought it was excellent. I thought this was the best Hell in a Cell match since Sasha against Becky 2 years ago at the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And it was redemption. Speaking of that pay-per-view, it was redemption for Seth Rollins, who on that very same show 2 years ago had one of the worst matches in WWE history, which I don't even blame him for. I don't blame him. I don't blame him. I don't blame The Fiend. I blame the company for putting that together. I blame one person who was responsible for that match. The one person who Seth Rollins admits he wanted to literally strangle when that match was over. This was redemption here inside Hell in a Cell for Seth Rollins. Now, Edge winning should, in theory, put him in line for a shot at the WWE Championship. Edge was drafted to Monday Night Raw. And the roster change goes into effect as of SmackDown tomorrow night. So Edge is on Raw now. It should put him in line for a WWE title match. That could be the next program for Big E coming out of Survivor Series. Survivor Series is going to be Raw versus SmackDown. That's Roman Reigns against Big E. And I think we all know how that's going to go. Coming out of that, we could be looking at Big E against Edge. And I was thinking, you know, when this match was over, and I even tweeted this, I said, you know, I feel bad for the poor bastards that have to follow that up. They opened with what ended up being the best match on the entire show. I feel badly for whoever it is that they send out there next to have a match. And it was smart for them to do what they did, because what they did was they took Mansoor, Saudi Arabia's own Mansoor, who you knew was going to get a big reaction no matter what, right? The big hometown reaction. They put him on next, one-on-one against Mustafa Ali. Ali, who tweeted that he would be donating 100% of his purse money from this pay-per-view to charity. So, good guy, Ali. He's a good dude. Ali used the camel clutch on Mansoor, who powered out, but Ali connected with a tornado DDT. Mansoor started mounting a comeback. I'm saying Mansoor because that's what they called him on the... I've been calling him Mansoor this entire time, like Mantar. And I heard Michael Cole, or whoever it was on commentary, I guess it was Cole, calling him Mansoor. So it seems to change depending on who the lead announcer is. We'll call him Mansoor. He clotheslined Ali out to the floor, went for a dive, but Ali caught him with a drop kick. And so with Mansoor draped over the middle rope, Ali climbs up to the top, goes for a 450 splash, but he misses. Mansoor follows up with a moonsault. Ali tried later for another 450, but Mansoor went to the apron and he hit a springboard neckbreaker for the win. You know, the thing I was thinking coming out of this match is both of these guys are really, really good. And I thought they were, at one point, they were really starting to gel, I felt, as a team. So, of course, they fucking broke them up. But both of these guys are really good. We already know how underutilized Ali is. I've sang his praises before. I don't blame him for retribution. He was trying to turn, you know, dog shit into something marginally better than dog shit. Not even he could do it. It was a bad idea. It was bad in execution. I can't even say the idea was bad. But in execution, it was horrendous. And he lost many, many, many months of his career to that garbage. So he is severely underutilized. He could definitely be doing more than what they have him doing now and competing at a higher level. But Mansoor has been good since the first time I saw him on NXT. And this is going back to when they were still working shows at Full Sail. He didn't make very many appearances there, maybe a couple. But if you go back and listen to those old sound-offs, I was like, man, this guy's pretty good. He's pretty impressive. And he's gotten better since then. So you have two quality guys there. Hopefully they could find something meaningful for them to do going forward on TV. Ali jumped Mansoor after the match, or Mansoor. See, there, I'm doing it now. He jumped Mansoor after the match. All of a sudden, we hear this music. I don't know whose music it is. A mystery man who is shrouded. We can't see him. A mystery man walks out. And boy, did he take his time coming down to the ring. You talk about milking a reaction. I don't know what they told him, but he was making like an Undertaker entrance down to the ring. Is how long this guy took to get down there. Finally, he gets inside and he reveals himself and he got a big pop. Got a big reaction from the crowd because we were told that it was Tarek Hamdi. Tarek Hamdi, who won a silver medal for Saudi Arabia in Taekwondo at this year's Olympic Games. Saudi Arabia's first silver medal in 21 years. Shout out to Sean O'Hare. Just became a sound of legend. Look at that. Sean O'Hare. Wasn't expecting that. But there was controversy with Hamdi because he took the silver after he knocked out his opponent. Kicked him in the head, knocked him out cold. Evidently, the nature of that kick, knocking somebody out, I guess that was against the rules. So he lost that match. And the guy that he kicked and knocked out won the gold. I don't think I've ever heard of something like that before, where somebody gets knocked the fuck out and they win the gold and the other person wins silver. So there was some controversy there with that. They recreated the spot here with Ali. This was like Michaels and Tyson or WrestleMania 14 or Jericho and some of the celebrity stuff they've done with him. Jericho and Mickey Rourke at WrestleMania 25. Ali is squaring up. He goes, oh, you want to do something. Okay. And he's squaring up with him. And as soon as Ali comes in, he ate a head kick and he got KO'd. It pleased the crowd. I think, you know, it was something done to pop the live crowd. But again, Ali deserves better than what he has been given. And my hope is that going forward, as far as, you know, a solid mid-card feud or a mid-card title even for him to compete for, I want to see him doing more than what they have him doing. And really, he should be a babyface. He's such a likable guy. I look at a guy like Adam Cole. And Adam Cole plays heel great. But Adam Cole, when I listen to him and I see him in interviews, has got to be the nicest fucking guy that I have ever seen in wrestling. Like, when he's doing interviews and he's off camera, he just seems like the nicest, you know, guy that you'll ever see. Ali is a genuinely nice guy. He's a guy I think that people want to cheer for. I think they want to root for. Not that he can't be a heel, but I think a babyface turn and, you know, a solid mid-card push is in line for him. I think he's earned it. I think after the shit they put him through last year, with that retribution nonsense, he's owed something. If Randy Orton and Matt Riddle, RK-Bro, taking on AJ Styles and Omos for the Raw Tag Team Championship, Corey Blake, coming to Sound Off Superstar. Welcome, Corey, and welcome to the 1500 Plus, joining us live here on a Thursday afternoon, a rare Thursday afternoon. Not used to this. I guess us Americans, though, we're due, right? We're due for these weird times for pay-per-views after everybody else in the world pretty much has to stay up super late, right? Super early in the morning to watch this shit. Midday, it's not too bad. It could be worse, right? The show could have come on at 4 o'clock in the morning. I know the UK fans know how that feels. Usually the shows are ending at 4 o'clock in the morning. Orton and Riddle came out. Riddle immediately bailed on Randy. He went to the back. I thought maybe he, forgot something. He forgot to take a hit, maybe. I don't know. But he left, and he took a long time to come back because what he was doing was he was mounting a camel. And he rode a camel to the ring. Last time I saw this would have been Bobby Heenan at Caesar's Palace, WrestleMania 9. I can't remember ever seeing someone else riding a camel down to the ring, but there he was, and Randy Orton had this look on his face like, what the fuck have I gotten myself into here? I guess they couldn't convince Randy to ride the camel. They probably said, we want both of you to ride dueling camels down to the ring, and Randy said, no. That's not going to happen. This was a match that you would see on Monday Night Raw. That's what I wrote down here. This was a Raw match. This was a Raw TV match. They kept Omos limited to only a few spots, which is for the better. Once he tagged out, the speed picked up with Styles and Riddle. AJ hit a Pele kick. Riddle connected with a knee strike. Orton shoved Styles into Omos. And Styles went for the phenomenal forearm, but as he came in, Orton caught him with an RKO. Riddle hit the floating bro. And they retained the tag team championships. When AJ was in there, it was fun, right? Pretty much the story of every AJ and Omos match. You know, Omos does the big man spots well. It's only a handful of things, like the tree slam and, you know, stepping over his opponent and stuff like that. It's simple stuff, but he does that fine. But AJ is the star here. AJ is the one that I want to see. AJ is the one that I want to see break away and go back to being a single star. So when he was in there with Riddle, I thought it was good. We had Doudrop. Oh, boy. We had Doudrop against Zelina Vega in the finals of the Queen's Crown Catastrophe, as I have dubbed it. They both wore t-shirts over long sleeves instead of their usual gear. Vega hit pretty nice-looking tornado DDT to Doudrop at one point. Doudrop went for a cannonball in the corner. Vega dodged it and hit a code breaker. Doudrop came back with a spinning side slam, followed that up with a running senton. But then she missed a splash, that running diving splash that she does off the ropes. Zelina moved out of the way. And Vega then hit a code red and got the pin. And then when the match was over, she walked down the ramp over to the throne, which was off to the side. And, to the actual throne, not the toilet, although this fucking tournament belongs in the toilet, but that's not the throne I'm referring to here. She walked over to the throne, and she put her robe on, and she grabbed her scepter and put the crown on her head, and she sat down, and the announcer said, "All hail Queen Zelina." Should be Queen Vega is what it should be. So, Zelina Vega wins the Queen's Crown Catastrophe 5 minutes and 51 seconds. I had to time this, of course. 5 minutes and 51 seconds, by far, not even close, the longest match in this entire tournament. I'm happy for her, but this whole thing, to say that they dropped the ball on this tournament would be an understatement. So ends the worst tournament that I think I have ever seen in WWE history. There have been some television tournaments that probably were a lot more insignificant even than this. So insignificant, I can't even remember what they would have been. But none of them made me upset the way that this one did. Because there was potential for this to be fun. And they completely screwed the pooch from the very first match in the very first round. And they never recovered. It's not like the first round sucked, but then the semifinals were pretty good, and the finals were good, so they kind of rebounded. No. This whole thing, pretty much up to the finals, and frankly, even the finals, I mean, you know, wasn't that great. This whole thing was just a fucking waste. In 5 minutes and 51 seconds in the finals, a tournament that start to finish did not even go a full 20 minutes. And it's illustrating a larger point. Forget the fact that this match only went this long, and you can have a really good short match. It's not even about that. It's not about the individual times, necessarily. It's about sitting here and realizing that over a period of weeks, in what they build as a big deal, right? The very first ever Queen's Crown Tournament, the Queen of the Ring, right? They've never had one of these before. That they would devote less than 20 minutes of airtime when they have 5 hours alone on Raw and SmackDown each and every week, and then you have this pay-per-view. They couldn't find more than 19 minutes in change to devote to eight women who started this tournament. To me, that is a huge black mark on the company as far as what they think of the women in that company. I think it's a complete embarrassment, and it's a fucking insult to every woman who works in that company. And you know that some of them at least have to feel the same way. They're not going to say anything about it publicly, but you know a lot of them could not have been happy about the fact that either if they weren't in the tournament or if they were, they went out there, and if you blinked, you missed them. Because I'm sure they wanted to go out there and lay it all on the line. They never had the chance. It never meant a thing. So I'm happy for Zelina. She had a moment here tonight. This honestly to me felt like maybe a make good for that 9/11 debacle when they sent her out doing public relations all week to promote 9/11, 20th anniversary of 9/11, SmackDown coming to Madison Square Garden. She was supposed to have a match. She had special gear made. She lost her father on 9/11. So her, it's like a great, you know, almost like a great comeback story for her. And then they cut her match. And that's what happens sometimes with live TV. But it was a really shitty thing to do. And so maybe this was their way of saying, here, this is, you know, us making it up to her. Maybe that had something to do with it. The fact is this. Here's the deal. This is not going to lead to some kind of push for Zelina Vega. So people thinking that this is going to be the start of some kind of big push for her. Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. It's a gimmick for her on television. It might get her more TV time, but this, I don't look at this as the start of any kind of real push. So I would settle down a little bit for anybody who is thinking along those lines. I still expect her to lose a whole bunch of matches, probably lose more than she wins. But she'll have a crown now when she does. It's like the company saying, here you go. Here you go. Here's a toy for you to play with. Now, you go on the side and let's focus on the other people we actually care about. That's what this feels like to me. We have Goldberg against Bobby Lashley. Holy crap, Sean O'Hare in the chat is going nuts. He's loving these emojis that you get when you become a channel member. He's going emoji crazy in the chat. Yeah, you got all kinds of old WWF logos in there. I found some cool stuff. I said, let's put them in there as emojis. Why not, right? And we'll have more coming soon. So he's having a blast. Goldberg against Bobby Lashley. No holds barred. And falls count anywhere in the building. That was the late stipulation that was added. Lashley wrapped a chain around his fist. The very beginning of the second match on this show where we had a chain introduced that was being wrapped around a part of someone's anatomy. In this case, it wasn't a boot, it was a fist. Goldberg didn't see it because Lashley had his back turned. And Lashley punched him with the chain and Goldberg got a small cut on his head, so of course it wouldn't be a Goldberg match unless he either busted himself open or somehow had his head split open. So he had a little bloody cut on the side of his head. Lashley went out to ringside, he brought a chair into the ring, and he hit Goldberg with the chair a couple of times, ran him shoulder first into the corner. Lashley brought a table into the ring, he set that up in the corner, and was working over Goldberg's bad knee from SummerSlam. Wrapped a chair around Goldberg's knee and stomped on it. So Lashley was setting up for the spear. Goldberg had stumbled up to his feet. And as Lashley came in, Goldberg ducked out of the way and avoided the spear, and Lashley crashed right through the table that had been propped up in the corner. Goldberg now, he got a second life, a second wind here in this match. And he follows that up with a spear of his own, hits a jackhammer, a shockingly good-looking jackhammer. Because by this point, Goldberg was already winded. We were only a few minutes into the match. He is older. He is not in the kind of shape that he was in 20 years ago. Every time he's in there with a bigger guy, and I always think back to the match with The Undertaker. Now, he was bloodied up a lot more than he was in this match, in that match with The Undertaker. Probably had his bell rung, to be honest with you. But when he's in there with a guy who is bigger than him, as big or bigger than him, at this age, it's never a guarantee that he's going to be able to get him up for the jackhammer or make it look any good. You know, when he was younger, he could do, I mean, he was fucking jackhammering the giant. It looked great, right? But everyone gets older, and you can't do a lot of the same stuff that you used to do. To his credit, he got him up for the jackhammer, and Lashley too, because Lashley has to go up for it. He got him up for the move, and he nailed it, but he didn't go for the pin. He wanted to prolong the suffering here for Bobby Lashley and everybody else. And he took off his gloves. The gloves were off, literally. And he threw Lashley out to the floor. And Goldberg goes out after him, and he spears Lashley through the barricade over by the timekeeper's area, and he's yelling at him, "You touch my son, you're dead. You don't mess with my family." No Sundberg on this show. Gage did not fly over to Saudi Arabia. So that might have been the biggest surprise of the entire show, that we didn't get an appearance by Sundberg running in and giving Lashley a low blow or having some kind of physical role on this show. So he pummeled Lashley all around ringside and tried to drop the ring steps on him, but Lashley moved. Lashley went to go leave. So he's already halfway up the ramp. Goldberg is slowly walking after him. And Lashley stops because here comes the Hurt Business. Here come his boys, Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander, and they walk out with kendo sticks. They give him a kendo stick. Each of them are armed with kendo sticks of their own. And Benjamin comes in first, charging in at Goldberg. Goldberg boots him down. Here comes Cedric. He backdrops Cedric on the ramp. And he picks up one of the kendo sticks. So now we have Lashley with the kendo stick. We have Goldberg with the kendo stick. In comes Goldberg. He gets the better of it. He's waylaying on Lashley with it. And as Lashley is slowly staggering to his feet by the edge of the ramp, now I couldn't see what was on the other side, but just the way that they were positioned, I knew that somebody was going off the stage. Well, not the stage, but the ramp. And as Lashley stumbles to his feet, here comes Goldberg. He spears Bobby Lashley off the ramp. I would say it's about a 5-foot drop. I think on commentary they said it was probably fucking 50 feet. It was about 5 feet, and he speared him off of the ramp down onto some tables that had a black tarp over them. I don't think it was a crash pad. It looked like two tables that were underneath, and speared him right down through it, pinned him 1, 2, 3, because it is false count anywhere. This was easily the best of the Goldberg matches, and I believe there have now been three of them. This was the best of the Goldberg matches in Saudi Arabia. Like I said, a very low bar. When you're comparing it to the Goldberg-Undertaker embarrassment and Goldberg against The Fiend. That's the body of work that we have to draw from here. This was easily the best of those three matches. It went down exactly the way that I said it would. They reunited the Hurt Business because Goldberg needed some bodies to mow down on TV, and I figured he would do it again here. And that's exactly what happened. That's the only reason Shelton and Cedric even were flown into Saudi Arabia. It wasn't to have some random kickoff match against the Usos that wasn't even announced until a few days ago. It was so that they could be in this match and Goldberg could backdrop them, kick them, beat them up in some way. That was the purpose that they served in going over there. And that's exactly how it played out. He mowed them down like bowling pins, and then he took out Lashley in the end. And you knew that he would take out Lashley because as soon as this match was no longer for the WWE Championship, that cleared the way for them to give Lashley the loss because Goldberg was fighting for his family. He's the babyface who's coming back after what happened at SummerSlam when he lost, and he's fighting for his son. He is trying to avenge his son and what happened to him at SummerSlam. He's literally threatening death upon Bobby Lashley. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill you. Which he didn't do, by the way. Lesson to all baby faces. Never make any promises that you can't keep. He promised death for Bobby Lashley. Bobby Lashley, last I checked, is still among the living. He is still breathing. He is still living. So he lied to all of us. But he got the win. And, you know, it was exactly what I expected. Now, Lashley, I can only hope that Lashley doesn't just sort of fade away. Because for so long, they kept him strong. He embraced the whole almighty thing. He was the destroyer, mowing people down on TV. He had, what was it, 8 months? 8 or 9 months as WWE champion? Maybe not nine, but it was pretty close. I thought he had a good run, and now it's somebody else's turn. But that doesn't mean that Lashley still can't be booked as a destroyer on TV. Now, I like that they reunited the Hurt Business. I'm hoping it didn't only happen to get through Saudi Arabia. And now Lashley is going to show up on Raw this Monday and beat the crap again out of Shelton and Cedric for letting him down. MVP is still recovering from knee surgery. I don't know when he'll be back. But I'd like to see the Hurt Business at least make it long enough for MVP to come back. That's my hope. At least keep them together a little bit longer. With Finn Balor against Xavier Woods in the finals of the King of the Ring tournament, with Zelina winning the Queen's Crown and being drafted over to Monday Night Raw. As soon as that happened, and then I saw we still had the King of the Ring coming up, the finals, I figured that we're probably in for some good news here for Xavier Woods if they want one crown on one show and one crown on another, unless they want both winners to be on the same brand. Zelina's on Raw. Woods is on SmackDown. I think Balor now is on Raw. That seemed to bode pretty well coming into this for Xavier Woods. Balor went up top. Woods cut him off and hit a superplex for a near fall. Woods went for his springboard elbow drop finish. Balor got the knees up, though, on the way down. Balor followed that up with a sling blade and a drop kick in the corner. He went up top for the coup de grace. Woods, though, avoided it. He rolled him up for a near fall. Xavier hit an enziguri and a gut buster, and then he went up again. He went back to the well again. He's going to try again for the springboard elbow off the ropes. And this time, halfway across the ring, he nails it and he gets the pin. 1, 2, 3, and Xavier Woods is your King of the Ring. That finish felt very sudden to me. It felt like this match had a few more minutes left in it. So that was kind of how I felt once he got the pin here. It's like, well, that kind of came out of nowhere. Yeah, less than 10 minutes, so hardly a memorable tournament final here. But I thought it was good for the time it lasted. It was a good match. A rare babyface King of the Ring, something we have not gotten in over 20 years. It was pointed out to me, I made the comment last week, that Edge would have been the last babyface king that we had in 2001, which was 20 years ago, and that was incorrect. What I was remembering is Edge being a babyface mid-year in 01. Edge went babyface right after that. Technically, I believe he was still a heel. So somebody corrected me on it. I forgot who it was. I'll thank them for that. But if that's the case, the last babyface King of the Ring winner that we had would have been Ken Shamrock. And that was all the way back in 1998. So again, they don't generally crown a babyface king. It is inherently a heel gimmick, as it was for the Queen of the Ring, right? With Zelina being the first queen. So it's been a very long time since we have had a babyface King of the Ring. Xavier Woods is someone who has been very vocal about this on social media and in interviews now for a number of years. He loves the King of the Ring, and he always wanted WWE to bring it back so that he can be in the tournament and he could win, and we could get King Woods. He has been very vocal online about that. I cannot hate on that. I'm a King of the Ring fan myself, at least the way they used to do it. My favorite all-time WWE pay-per-view, or if not favorite, then top three, is the King of the Ring. The first time they took King of the Ring and put it on pay-per-view was 1993. It was the Bret Hart show. That is one of my all-time favorite shows. That, to me, is still the best King of the Ring tournament, of the televised ones anyway, that they have ever done, ever, was the one in 93. So I share that enthusiasm for the King of the Ring, and I can appreciate that. My critique is that I wish he would have been given more time to tell that story on TV. Because even though he talks about it online and on Twitter and stuff, we never really got that one serious on-camera promo on TV explaining to us why King of the Ring means so much to him. The announcers mentioned it. They would drop little comments. Michael Cole or Jimmy Smith, whoever it was, would tell us about how much it would mean to Xavier Woods to become King of the Ring. But we never really got that one great promo from him on TV. Like, where he gets serious for a little bit and tells us, why does it mean so much? Like, why? Why should people be invested in wanting to see Xavier Woods win this tournament? Other than the fact that he's a babyface who's part of New Day and people like New Day. And so, yeah, we'd like to see him win. I think more people would have wanted to see Finn Balor win. Unless they knew the story. The people who knew the story probably were pulling for Woods. So it made for a great feel-good ending to the tournament here. But I don't think they adequately got that story over on television. There was a real story that they could have told in this tournament. It's why I was just blown away by the fact that they had it handed to them. Semifinals. Kofi Kingston. One-on-one against Xavier Woods. Friend against friend. And if you actually had something on the line in this tournament, like a championship match to the winner, that's an even better story. Because Kofi has been WWE champion. And look at the way he got screwed when he lost the title. So you know he would love to get that title back. Now you got the two New Day members against each other in the semifinals. All of a sudden, this is getting interesting. Kofi says, look, brother, I know how much this means to you. But the WWE title means everything to me. So we're going to go in there. I'm not going easy on you. I want that title. I want that crown. And you get a real competitive match between the two of them, and Xavier has his chance to cut his promo on why winning King of the Ring means as much to him as winning the WWE title means to Kofi. And you put those guys out there on TV, let them go for 15 minutes. You don't have to give them half an hour. Let them go out there for 15 minutes through two or three commercial breaks and have a kick-ass match with Woods getting the win. And in the end, they shake on it. They don't have to break up. One of them doesn't have to go heel. But now you've told this great story, and now Xavier going to the finals means so much more. It's just basic storytelling. And they didn't take full advantage of that story. And if you look at the women's tournament, it's not shocking. I mean, both of these tournaments were completely devoid of any storytelling at all. They just didn't do a very good job. But Kofi Kingston was the WWE champion. Big E, of course, is currently the WWE champion. Xavier Woods was really the odd man out as far as singles accomplishments. He's never going to be the world champion. He's just not. So for him, this is like his world title. So we got the feel-good moment to end this. I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that, even though I had, you know, I think I'd pick Balor to win. But I'm fine with this finish because there is nothing at stake. There is nothing at stake here. They'd never said that this was for any kind of a championship match. You know, they can have a breakout tournament on NXT where the winner of the breakout tournament can challenge for any championship of his choosing. But yet, a King of the Ring tournament, and there's no stakes whatsoever. And really, I think for the people who think King of the Ring means something, it's all of those people who are romanticizing it because they grew up watching King of the Ring. And they want to believe that it means something. But watch any King of the Ring tournament that they have done ever since it went off pay-per-view. When Booker T won, I mean, it reinvigorated his career, but there was nothing on the line. When Sheamus won, or Barrett, or anybody else, right? Corbin. The tournament really doesn't mean anything. There's nothing tangible at stake. So if there's nothing tangible like a world title match at stake, which, you know, Finn Balor belongs in the world title picture on Raw, Xavier Woods is not going to be challenging for a world championship. So him winning the crown is perfectly fine. It's a gimmick now for him to run back on TV. I don't have an issue with it. And you know why I also don't have an issue with it? Because it went to somebody who actually gives a shit. A lot of people in this company, behind the scenes, don't really seem to give a shit about King of the Ring. This guy does. To him, it means something. You can call him a mark if you want, but It means something to him. If it was going to go to somebody, I'm happy it went to somebody who, to them, it's meaningful. Drew McIntyre against Big E. Speaking of which, for the WWE Championship. We all knew how this was going to go because Drew McIntyre is on his way to SmackDown tomorrow night. This is the disadvantage of doing the draft this time of year instead of doing it almost any other time of year, is that we knew that Drew McIntyre was not leaving with the WWE Championship and taking it over to Friday nights. Even still, this was a very enjoyable match. McIntyre early on hit a giant belly-to-belly on the floor, and Big E bounced. Didn't look like it was a very fun move for him to take. Later on, Big E countered the Future Shock DDT with a belly-to-belly of his own, and Big E went for the big ending. McIntyre fought out and hit a Michinoku driver for a near fall. In the corner, Big E hit the sit-down Uranage, the Samoa Joe move, which has now been co-opted by Big E. Drew countered that with a Future Shock DDT that connected this time. McIntyre went for the Claymore, but Big E caught him charging in with a powerbomb and then locked in the stretch muffler. McIntyre escaped, but walked right into a big ending for a two count. He got the kick out. He tried for a big ending off the ropes. McIntyre, though, countered that into a bulldog off the top for a near fall. These guys were going back and forth. People were just into every near fall. They were enjoying the back and forth between these two guys. The best near fall of this match was the best near fall, I think, of the entire show. In the middle of all this back and forth offense between these two, McIntyre flew into camera view and hit a Claymore kick, a great sounding, great looking Claymore kick. Boom! Right in the face. And even for a split second, it was very brief, but even for a split second had me convinced that maybe there would be a change, even though I knew there wouldn't be. That was a great near fall. Got 2 9/10 on that near fall, but Big E kicked out. McIntyre went for the big ending. He went to go use Big E's move against him, but E countered out, turned a tilt-a-whirl into a big ending of his own for the win. Very good match, even with a predictable finish. And another name, a big name on the current roster for Big E to beat as Drew leaves Raw and now ventures over to SmackDown to build his name there and eventually maybe build to a championship match against Roman Reigns. It would seem very likely that early next year that'll be the destination. Whether that's going to be WrestleMania or not remains to be seen because we know we haven't seen the last of Lesnar and Reigns. And frankly, if you were to say to me, which is the bigger match for a WrestleMania main event, even though we've seen it before, I mean, we've seen both those matches before, but we've seen Lesnar and Reigns a lot more than we've seen Lesnar and or Reigns and McIntyre. But what feels like the bigger WrestleMania main event? Lesnar and Reigns. If you gave me the option of choosing what I thought would be the bigger match, that's probably the one I would go with. So I don't know that it's a lock that it would be McIntyre and Reigns or WrestleMania, maybe the Royal Rumble. We'll see. Seems like it's going to be one of those two guys, though. Who else would it be? They don't have a lot of options. And they're not getting The Rock. Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, and Bianca Belair for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Or, as Becky would say, it was a triple threat. Right? That's how she says it. Triple threat match for the SmackDown Women's title. Bianca pressed Sasha over her head with one hand early on. That was very cool. I thought that was tremendous. There was so much back and forth here. I can't recap every near fall. This was just nonstop action in this match, which is one of the things I liked about it. It never really slowed down enough for you to get bored or think, okay, let's pick up the pace here. They just went from one to the other to the other. One woman would knock the other one out of the picture. We'd get two, then the other one would make a save. Back and forth they went. Sasha hit the Three Amigos, got chance of Eddie here in Saudi Arabia. Lynch came back and took out Sasha. Bianca hit a delayed vertical suplex, and Becky and Sasha teamed up to take out Bianca with the combination bank statement, disarm her. Sasha had Becky locked in the bank statement when Bianca crashed down onto both of them with a springboard. And Becky hit the manhandle slam on Sasha. Bianca, who was outside at that time, slid in at the last possible moment. It looked like she put her fist or her forearm right in Becky's face, but she got the pin broken up there. Moments after that, Sasha slid underneath Bianca's legs and tried to give her a sunset bomb off the apron. Bianca wouldn't go. She was holding onto the ropes. And finally, Bianca backflipped onto the floor, landed on her feet. Sasha went for a backstabber, and Bianca was blocking it. And while they're struggling with each other, out of camera view, here comes Becky Lynch. I believe she was on the announce desk. And she comes off with a crossbody, wipes everybody out. Becky goes for the disarm her, and then she puts Sasha in the hold as well when she comes in. So she's got her submission finish locked on both women, a double disarm her spot. Bianca powered out, hit the KOD on Becky. Sasha tried to dump Bianca out of the ring so she could steal the pin, but Bianca reversed it, threw her out of the ring instead. Sasha pulled Bianca out to the floor, went back inside, tried to steal the win, but when she got in, Becky pulled her in for the roll-up, and when she rolled up Sasha, the referee didn't see it. She grabbed the ropes for leverage, and she got the pin. And Becky Lynch retains her SmackDown Women's Championship. I thought this was a very good triple threat. A very good match. Constant motion, never a dull moment, tons of near falls where really it could have gone any number of ways. This was maybe the least predictable, maybe, of all that. I mean, most of the matches were fairly predictable. Outside maybe of the King and Queen matches, this might have been the least predictable match on the entire show. Because if you really think about it, even though I didn't think Becky was going to lose the title, she should have. Because Becky Lynch is the SmackDown Women's Champion. Becky Lynch is now on Monday Night Raw. Bianca Belair is on Monday Night Raw. Sasha Banks was the only woman in this match officially now, as of tomorrow, who is not even on Raw. She's on SmackDown. And this match is for the SmackDown Women's Championship. So they could have solved this problem by putting the title on Sasha and put that belt where it belongs. The problem, of course, is that Charlotte Flair is the Raw Women's Champion and she's going to SmackDown. So they have completely convoluted this whole situation here. It is a mess of their own making. So the SmackDown Women's title stays on Monday Night Raw, and Charlotte Flair is moving to SmackDown with the Raw Women's title. So the question now is, how are they going to solve this little problem that they've gotten themselves into? They could do what they did last year with the tag team titles, which I think is the lazy way to go, which is literally just have a belt swap. Like a wife swap. You could do a belt swap on TV. Or you could change the name of the title. Or something really, really lame like that. They could do that. They may have to dust off the old wild card rule. And then they can get somebody on the show who isn't technically on the roster. That could be their way of explaining how they showed up on the other show and got a title shot. And maybe they win it and take it back home with them. I don't see them doing a unification. I've seen that idea floated around. Maybe they're going to unify the titles. I cannot see them unifying the titles. I've talked for so long about how they should unify the tag team titles. They're not going to turn around and unify the two singles women's championships. So to me, they're going to just do a belt swap. Or they're going to lean on that dumb wild card rule that they dust off every now and then as a crutch when they need it. That's probably what they'll end up doing. Which leads us to the main event. Roman Reigns, one-on-one. 416 days as Universal Champion, defending his title against Brock Lesnar. Lesnar coming out to a monster pop for his first match in 19 months. And his first match as a babyface, officially, since 2003. Because he's been a heel ever since he's come back in 2012. Yeah, he may have been in the ring against people who they cheered him over, the other guy, like they did with Roman when Roman was getting booed, but clearly in those matches, Roman was the babyface, and Brock was the heel. So, officially speaking, this would have been Brock's first babyface match in almost 20 years. So, he got a nice reaction coming out. I love that shot of the sound-off sign. I got to show it again. I have to show it again for all the people who joined late here in the stream. There it is. During the entrances here for the main event, as Roman Reigns holds his Universal title. Look at Paul Heyman staring intently at his man. Right there in the background, behind the green... Is that the green belt that they gave to Braun Strowman when he won the greatest Royal Rumble? I believe it is. But right behind that is the sound-off sign, representing the podcast worldwide. It's a shout-out again to the Lonely One on Twitter. He's the one who brought that sign. Said he was going to do it. He delivered. Unlike Goldberg, when this guy makes a promise, he delivers. Goldberg just lies to us. So the match begins. Lesnar hits the first German suplex within the first 30 seconds. We get the first German. Start stomping a mud hole in Reigns. They fight to the floor. And Roman bounces Lesnar's pumpkin head off the ring post. Brock comes back, tries for an F5, and Reigns is fighting it. So instead, he F5s him back into the ring. Lesnar climbs up onto the ring apron as he's trying to get back inside. But he gets caught with a Superman punch. Gets knocked down to the floor. Roman's looking, and he's looking at the ropes, and he's looking at Brock, and he's looking at the ropes, and so you could tell he's teasing a dive. And he hits the ropes, and he comes off with a giant dive out over the top rope, hands free, lands right on Brock. Looks like he rammed his head right into the barricade on the way down. They showed a few replays of this. It looked great. That was a great spot. Back inside, Roman hit a spear, only gets 2.5. Setting up for a Superman punch, hits it, takes Lesnar down only to one knee. Two Superman punches. That takes Brock down to the mat. And Brock looks glazed over. Brock always looks glazed over. Usually about 4 or 5 minutes into the match, he's completely red-faced and he's looking glazed over. But he's a hell of a seller. When Brock sells for you, he's very good at it. Well, here comes Roman for the spear. But Brock, as Roman comes in, jumps up. He did this in the match with Goldberg at WrestleMania 33, only this actually looked better. He completely cleared Roman on the leapfrog. He jumps up into the air, and Roman runs himself headfirst with the middle turnbuckle. So now both men are down. Brock gets up, hits German suplex number 2, number 3, and number 4. And he hits the F5. Roman, though, sneaks a shoulder up at the last possible second. Goes for another F5. But on the way down, Roman slips out. He locks on the guillotine choke, and he is hanging on to Brock's body. He's got his body wrapped around Brock's. He's trying to choke this guy out. Lesnar gets a second wind, and he drops him with a spine buster. So again, Brock gets Roman up for an F5. This time, though, very blatantly, he F5s him and throws him right into the referee. Poor Charles Robinson just standing there doing his job, minding his own business. And all of a sudden, Roman just collides with him. He gets thrown right into poor Chuck. Down goes Chuck. Down goes Lil Nate. Lesnar gets up. He's looking around. There's no referee. He looks down at Charles Robinson. He grabs him by his waistband, picks him up. This is what he did in the first match he had back, actually, with John Cena. At Extreme Rules in 2012, when the referee... And you know what? It might have been Robinson. I don't remember who the referee was for that match. I wonder if it was Charles Robinson. It might have been. But he got knocked out, and the same thing. Brock picked him up by the waistband, threw him into the ring. In this case, he was already in the ring. He picked him up. He dropped him back down. And then Robinson rolled out to the floor. So there's no referee. Brock turns around. He walks right into a spear by Roman Reigns. So now Brock Lesnar is down. Roman Reigns is down. Paul Heyman is outside the ring. This whole storyline has revolved around one person, and it's not Roman Reigns, and it's not Brock Lesnar, it's Paul Heyman. So you knew that he was going to factor into the finish in some way. Just didn't know how. They zoom in on Heyman. He has this conflicted look on his face. He's got the Universal belt in his possession, and he throws the belt into the ring. But he throws it in a position that is equidistant between both men. So it doesn't look like he threw it to Brock, and it doesn't look like he threw it to Roman. He threw it right down the middle. He should be a pitcher. We could use him on the Mets. Right down the middle. Strike right down the middle of the plate. And I think he shouted, "You know what to do." So the question is, who did he throw the belt to, and who was he talking to when he said, "You know what to do"? Who was he referring to? We don't know. So both men go for the belt. Brock gets possession of the championship. But here come the Usos. I think it was Jey Uso got in the ring and caught Brock with a super kick. Roman grabs the belt. He nails Lesnar in the head with it, and he covers him. Here comes another referee, Chad Patton. He rolls into the ring, or slides into the ring. 1, 2, 3. Roman Reigns pins Brock Lesnar to retain the Universal Championship. I wasn't convinced we were going to get a clean, well, not clean, but an actual pinfall victory for anybody in this match. I figured it was going to be a disqualification. And again, this is what is so confusing to me, because it was a regular match coming into this show. And then they added the no DQ stip. But then we see that Roman pinned Brock. So it could have been no DQ. You could have had a no disqualification match anyway if Roman was going to pin him. Still did the exact same finish. It would have worked. So I don't know what that was all about. That just seemed fucking weird that they would announce a stipulation and then immediately rescind it. Could have been Brock basically saying, hey, I didn't agree to this. Fuck this. You better take that back. But this is the Paul Heyman story. Who did he throw the belt to? We don't know. This is going to be like the next 4 weeks worth now of segments on SmackDown with Roman and Heyman making, you know, crying and making faces and stuff. But he's so good at it. Even though this seems like the same story we've been seeing for the last 6 months, they play their parts so well, I don't really mind it as much. Now, eventually, this story, unless they introduce new twists and turns, is going to get old. But I'm still enjoying it. I think everybody is doing a great job with this. And Abbas in the chat, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. When this was over, I was thinking Brock's got to be winning the title of WrestleMania. I mean, that's what it seems like this is setting up for. Which probably means he's going to be winning the Royal Rumble in January. I think Lesnar's going to go away. He might be on TV tomorrow night. But I think he'll probably be going away very soon. We won't see him again until Royal Rumble time. And I could see him winning the Royal Rumble and going to WrestleMania and challenging Roman Reigns in a rematch. And this time he wins. And Brock is the one, babyface Brock, is the one to beat Roman and take the Universal Championship away from him. Drew McIntyre is still on that SmackDown brand. It could be Roman and Drew. I could be wrong. I enjoyed the hell out of the match Roman and McIntyre had last year at Survivor Series. I'd like to see them run that back again. But it may not be the main event of WrestleMania. This seems like everything now is set for the rematch to happen on that show. I cannot think of a bigger opponent for Roman Reigns. It has to be Lesnar or McIntyre. And take your pick about who you would rather see in that spot. But after what we saw here, I think that person should be Brock. I enjoyed the match up until the finish. I thought the finish, which it was designed that way. The finish was what it was. I didn't expect a clean finish here. Up to that point, I was enjoying the match. I thought that they worked it very well. It was the right length, right? It wasn't too short, wasn't too long. And they had to do some kind of screwy finish to get to the eventual second match. Look, it was better than having no winner at all. We could have had a no contest. There are far worse things they could have gone with for a finish to that match. So I enjoyed it. So when I look back on this pay-per-view, I thought this was a very good show. I mean, how could I say this was anything other than a thumbs-up show? Easily the strongest of all the Saudi Arabia efforts they've put together so far. It was a loaded card. On paper, I thought it delivered. None better than that Hell in a Cell match. If there's one match, I would say go out of your way to try to see it, because I know not everybody watches the Saudi shows, or people are going to be coming home from work right around now or in a few hours because they were at the office and they couldn't watch this live. Solomonster, what match should I watch? You should probably watch the whole show, but if it's only one match, watch the very first one. Watch the Hell in a Cell match with Rollins and Edge, because I thought that was an excellent match. Let us see if I am in the minority on this. On Twitter. Look at Michael Jordan just subscribed to the channel. Look at that. The greatest of all time. The GOAT. Michael Jordan just subscribed to the channel. Bulu Fatulu. Thank you for that $10. Russo on it. Look at Baby Russo. Look at Baby Russo all blown up here. Russo on a poll. $10 super chat. I will read your message in a little bit. But 55% thumbs up. 20.7% thumbs down. 24% of you said thumbs in the middle. I'm surprised by that. I actually am surprised by that. I would have expected that thumbs up to be a little bit higher. So maybe I am in the minority. I didn't look at what everybody else has said yet. Maybe I am in the minority. Blair Davis, thank you for the sub. Welcome to the channel. Welcoming Blair here with us. We also, by the way, have a poll that is ongoing in the live chat on YouTube. And that poll has 1,700 votes in. 67% up, 33% thumbs down. This one only has two options. There's no thumbs in the middle on that one. So that's the way things are looking right now. We're going to be on the air live here for a little while longer. So by all means, go ahead and cast your vote. But yeah, that is surprising, I have to say. That actually is surprising. I would have expected the thumbs up to be a little bit stronger, but you may have had people who just, you know, maybe they didn't see the whole show or didn't see the show at all. Just not a fan of any of these shows. That's also very possible. All righty. Let me bring up, because I know you guys have a lot to say about this show. We're going to have ourselves a little super chat party here. Here on a Thursday evening, this is eating into my dinner time, but I am devoting my dinner time to all of you. So I hope you all appreciate this. Actually, before I even get into your super chats here, hold on a second. Let me cut away to something else I wanted to mention here. If you are a fan of my movie reviews, I know some of you are. I did see Halloween Kills the other night. I've been asked about this. I did do a review, and that is up right now on the YouTube channel, right here, where you are listening and watching this as we speak. Halloween Kills, that review is up for you to watch when you are done here with the Crown Jewel stream. I will let you know on there. There we go. Now we're back. I just wanted to make sure I didn't forget that. Had a lot of people ask me about Halloween Kills, my thoughts, a lot of very divided opinion. Kind of like this pay-per-view, I guess, based on that Twitter poll. More divided than I thought it would be. Yeah, I will most likely do a review of the new Scream movie as well in January. I've been asked about that too. I'm going to be seeing that. So there'll be a Scream review in a few months as well. Hashway. I want to thank Hashway for the $5 super chat. Finally, he can catch a live stream, he says, without drawing on the screen with one eye open. Just hoping Undertaker does not answer the phone and show up. Undertaker was actually in Saudi Arabia. I saw him come out in his full gear to introduce Pitbull at a concert. Talk about fucking random. I thought for sure he'd end up showing up on this show and making a cameo, but thankfully he didn't. And he shouldn't. He should stay away and enjoy his retirement. Put a little more distance between his retirement ceremony at Survivor Series last year and the next Undertaker appearance. I know he's going to be back, but give it a little more time. That way everybody can miss him first. When he comes back, they'll actually be excited to see him again. Nayef Al-Safar, thank you for the $9.99. Joshua Carlos with the $5. Queen Vega segments are going to give me another reason to change the channel. Terrible booking. And he says, decent show so far, but the draft kills the suspension. Yeah, the timing of the draft is just awful when it comes to some of these shows. I mean, there's lots of other better times to be doing a draft. And we go through this every single year. I don't understand why they do not make that change. Because I just think it would work out a lot better when it comes to some of these matches they do. It wouldn't be a foregone conclusion about who's going to walk out as the winner. Make things a little bit less predictable, you know? There's other reasons for doing it elsewhere. I've talked about this on the podcast already. I'm not going to relitigate that here for you again. Max with the $2 super chat. I thought Heyman was going to become the referee. Somebody had floated that idea, and I said, it's not a bad idea. Heyman could have been the special guest referee for this match. It would have totally worked with the storyline. Is he going to call the match down the middle or not? Griga. Friday Night SmackDown at Ontario, California had an after show of tribute to the troops, which spoiled the winner for me on Lesnar against Reigns. So a dark match spoiled the Oh, unless he's saying that they ran the same finish, which I actually didn't see the tribute to the troop stuff, so. Or maybe he's implying that it was not a dark match. Was it a match on the tribute to the troop special? Where Roman came out with the belt? Is that what he's referring to? That would be a spoiler. That would definitely be a spoiler. Supratik Boxy. I am a Big E fan, but do you think he is too phony and goofy as WWE champion compared to someone like Drew, who looks like a Hollywood star? Big E is a very goofy guy. Big E got over as a very goofy guy. And I don't have an issue with it at this point. I think he needs to get serious in certain situations when the circumstances are such that he should get serious. If he is put out in an injury angle, when he comes back, he should be super serious. If somebody slaughters his New Day friends, kind of like what Lashley did a few months ago, I think he should have cashed in his money in the bank on Lashley, then I think he should be serious. But I think at this point, Big E is who he is. You know, he's gotten over as the person that he is. I don't want him to be something he's not, but I do think that I wish he would tone it down sometimes. But as long as he gets serious when the situation warrants, then I think that's fine. But if he's going to be goofy guy all the time, that I have an issue with. Mr. All Day, I actually enjoyed this show. I'm thinking for weeks, 4 weeks, to Survivor Series, and I'm thinking Bianca against Sasha to get the match we did not get at SummerSlam. GMC, thank you for the $5. Appreciate it. Here we got a lot of people sticking up for Big E here in the chat. Suda, with the $4.99, watched it work. WWE title and King of the Ring matches were great. One thing WWE has over AEW right now is minority talent at the top of the card. Spade Racing, the Saudi monster. Love the passion today. I was inspired by that sound-off sign that I saw. It's like that was like a whole shock of adrenaline right into my heart. Like, right there. You know, I saw that. I knew he was going to try to bring a sign. I did not know that he was going to be right in that spot, right opposite the hard camera. I mean, that was... And by the way, the sign itself, great fucking job. That sign looked badass. The colors and everything. I mean, I don't know how he put that together, if he colored it in himself or, you know, he just printed something out and taped it on. But that sign looked just like the logo. So that was probably the best sound-off sign that I've ever seen someone bring to one of these shows. It was great. It was halfway around the world. Mordecai McNasty, congrats to Xavier. Achieving a lifelong goal deserved the old-school King of the Ring pay-per-view format, but I'm still happy for him nonetheless. Ojolly Burgos, to think Zelina could have been wrestling Penny Peppernickel from Pittsburgh on Dark, or be one of Andrade's 50 managers. Seriously, though, congrats to her. Let us not forget, though, that this is the same Zelina Vega who re-signed with WWE thinking that she was going to be working with her husband, only for the company to turn around and fire her husband. Pretty shitty thing to do to somebody. Magician Sapphire with the $10 drop. Sweet Saudi Money 7, Dear Lord in Heaven. It's got potential. Russell S., best Saudi show by far. Edge and Seth killed it. Off topic, but any thoughts on the Shibata return? Well, you just pissed off a whole bunch of people who probably haven't watched the G1 finals yet, but I did watch that earlier today. That was very unexpected and very cool. And without giving anything else away about the show, I will talk more about the G1 finals on Sunday's podcast. So you'll get my thoughts on that show. Tibbs316 with the $20 Super Chat drop. Best way to finish the workday is some Salamonster. Well, don't get used to it. So don't get used to these Thursday 4 o'clock streams. Mr. Yule, I'm still the only Goldberg fan on this channel. Glad to see he didn't look like a complete old geezer. Great to be on with you, Salamonster. Well, it's great to have you, Mr. Yule. Goldberg looked about as good as I think Goldberg is going to look these days. He didn't go out there and embarrass himself. Nothing worse than dried chicken. dropping the $6 super chat here. Let's switch up the music. There we go. Change things up. Dried chicken. Nothing worse than dried chicken, which is true. Good evening. That table shot in Hell in a Cell and Lashley were great. Good to see you at a reasonable time here in the UK. Hashway, love Seth's bump from the cell to the table. But what was amazing is when Michael Cole called the sunset flip the sunset flop. Oh, I missed that. I didn't hear that. He called it the sunset flop. Yeah. Well, I guess that works too, right? It's just like the unprettier is also an edge move. Maybe it was the long flight to Saudi Arabia. Maybe he was jet lagged. We'll have to cut Michael Cole some slack. Sirius says, Sweet Saudi 7, dear Lord in heaven. We just had somebody who said that. Christian, Sweet Saudi Money 7, not going to heaven. Enforcer 2K9 says, Sweet Saudi Money 7, no chance in heaven. Team Forward, I hope Lashley's career will not end up like Wyatt's. Yeah, that would not be good for Bobby Lashley. Anti-M Bishop, dropping $5. Salutation, Solomon's 3. Sounds like Keith Lee now. Here's a little something for watching Sweet Saudi Money 6. Plus, Tony Khan against Eric Bischoff in a fight. Who wins? Well, I mean, Bischoff is, what is he, 66 years old, I think? Something like that. I'll go with Tony Khan. Tony Khan will pay somebody to beat up Eric Bischoff for him. Because Tony Khan has a lot more money than Eric Bischoff does. Bulu Fatulu just dropped three different Super Chat bombs here. One right after the other. 5, 5, and 5. So that's $15. Bulu says, Toodles, Solomonster. Did you just get me to say Toodles? Did you think the gun draw in El Camino was epic? Thought it was okay. I left El Camino feeling a little underwhelmed. Not that it's a bad movie. It says buy or sell RoboCop or Terminator. I'm a RoboCop guy. So I'll go with RoboCop. I think he dropped the same super chat twice. French fry slut. With the $2. Xavier's scepter looks like a vibrator. What kind of tournament do you think this is? What kind of tournament did this man win? He might regret becoming King of the Ring. MJG Chick with the $9.99. Just want to say you're awesome and Bianca Belair is not human. Well, thank you, and I agree. She is. She's like a Terminator. She's a very powerful woman. She can do some very impressive things. She's a great athlete. Simi Valley with the $10. What championships, if any, do you think will change hands before Survivor Series? Well, the WWE title and the Universal title are going to stay right where they are. I think the tag team titles of the two, the Raw tag team titles, are more likely to change before the SmackDown ones. The 24/7, who gives a fuck? Intercontinental, I still say Sheamus is going to be the one to take that title from Nakamura, but I don't know that that's going to happen before Survivor Series. US title is Damian Priest. Well, right now, it would be Priest and Nakamura then, right? You know what? I'll tell you what. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Damian Priest ends up challenging Sheamus. They do it again because Sheamus wins the IC title from Nakamura before Survivor Series. So that'll be my prediction. If any of these titles are going to change hands, I think Sheamus might take the IC from Nakamura. And then that sets up another Damian Priest-Sheamus match for Survivor Series. Because I could totally see them doing that. Nothing worse than dried chicken. Can we all agree to many interference... Too many, he says. Too many, you forgot the extra oath. I don't mean to be the grammar police, but that changed the entire definition of your super chat. It changed the whole meaning of it. So he wants to know, too much interference in WWE and AEW. Yes, there is too much interference in both companies. all the Elite stuff and everything in AEW. And yes, I would say that it is a... I'm not going to say which company has it worse. It's bad no matter what, but they both have that issue. Oh my goodness! Look, it popped up here. Professor John Gotti. There I am cutting my promo with my Solid Monster belt there. Professor John Gotti with the $150 Super Chat bomb here on a Thursday evening. The good professor joining us here. What were my thoughts, he says, on the crowd tonight? I thought the crowd was great. You know, some of these Saudi shows, they've been on the more subdued side in the past. They were up for almost everything on this show from beginning to end. They really were into everything they saw, so I thought the crowd actually enhanced the show. But Professor John Gotti, thank you so much for the $150. That was very kind of you. Doing a drive-by. It's funny, I just got a super chat asking me about interference. And then Professor John Gotti interferes here in my stream and interrupts me. See, that's the kind of interference I can get behind. Bulu, who is your favorite villain? I love how all of Bulu's super chats have absolutely nothing to do with wrestling. He is so disinterested in pro wrestling, but he is such a huge fan of music and movies. I appreciate the passion. I appreciate the passion that he has for it. But anyway, his super chat is, who is my favorite villain of any TV show of all time? Oh, I don't know. I mean, there have been a lot of really great ones. You know, I'm a Walking Dead fan, so I'm very familiar with the Governor and Negan, and those are some of my favorite villains. But I'm also a fan of, you know, the Shield and the season where they had Antoine Mitchell, Anthony Anderson playing Antoine Mitchell on the show, or oh God, who was the main villain from season 2? The guy who got shanked in the holding cell. I forgot his name. Anyway, there have been a lot of really great villains on TV. I can't narrow it down to just one. There's far too many to name. I feel like I'm going to leave one of them out. Vince McMahon, there you go. Batman in the chat. Batman is definitely not a supervillain. But Batman has the right idea, yeah. Vince McMahon. Vince would be on the list. Greatest heel in WWE history. I am Barbarian. How would you map the rest of the year for Big E as far as opponents? Quizzical one, thank you. Yes, it was Armadillo. Armadillo Quintero. Thank you very much. It was right on the tip of my tongue. I forgot the guy's name. It was the guy who, he was actually on Law and Order for a while, years later, when Chris Maloney left the show. He was a cop on the show for a few years. But yes, Armadillo, thank you. How would I map out the rest of the year for Big E? I mean, how do I see it being mapped out? I think we're heading for Big E and Roman at Survivor Series, and I think coming out of it, it should be Edge. I mean, Edge just won the trilogy against Seth Rollins, right? And both of them are going to be on Raw. Why should Rollins get the shot before Edge does? Because Rollins is a heel? So, if you think about this logically, it really should be Edge. But I don't know that they're going to want to do babyface against babyface. They just did it tonight. Right? Big E and Drew. I don't know that they're going to want to come back with another babyface against babyface match. Bulu, buy or sell Guns N' Roses or Bon Jovi for better 80s songs? Of the two, for me, I'm a Bon Jovi guy. So I'm going to go buy on Bon Jovi. And buy or sell, he says, on The Departed 2006 or Gone Baby Gone 2007. Better Boston-based movie. The Departed. Lemmyhead dropped $50. I missed that earlier. Lemmy dropped the $50 bomb here. Solid Monster, I cannot stand the WWE product anymore. I keep up by listening to you. Greetings from parts unknown. I am a sound off guy. And he puts up the emoji. I will give it right back to you right there. There you go, the Wolfpack sign. Is it the Wolfpack sign or is it Hook 'em Horns? Isn't it all the same shit? Lemmy, thank you for the 50 spot, man. That's very nice. Very nice of you. Food Hive. Just saw that you were live and wanted to show some love. I'm a win, and name the next Saudi show as well to make two names in a row. That's right, Food Hive was the one who came up with Sweet Saudi Money 6, Enough of This. So you've got some time now. You got to work on the next name. Hulu is back again. Buy or sell Shutter Island. He's just never ending here. Shutter Island or The Revenant, better Leo DiCaprio movie. I didn't see either one of them, so I can't answer it. Joshua Carlos, Pitbull and The Undertaker against Bad Bunny and Damian Priest at WrestleMania. Let's not and say we did. How about that? I like that better. Jimmy Boutros with the $13. First time seeing the Sala Monster live, as it is usually past bedtime in England. I don't watch The Fed anymore, but appreciate the reviews, as it is a great way of keeping up without having to watch. I aim to serve. A lot of people do not watch WWE or any wrestling anymore, and they just keep up with it through the podcast. And if they hear about something that sounds interesting to them, then they'll check it out. But otherwise, I'm their last link to wrestling, so I take that responsibility very seriously, because I'm hearing from more and more and more and more people who fall under that category. It's sad, but it's true. Bulu, buy or sell a Burger King Whopper or a McDonald's Big Mac? Well, I have not had McDonald's or Burger King. Actually, that's not true. I had McDonald's nuggets a few months ago. But prior to that, I don't think I had eaten Burger King or McDonald's in probably 15 years. I was always a McDonald's guy, though. I used to get the quarter pounder with cheese. And then later on without cheese, when I couldn't have cheese. So I'm a McDonald's guy. I used to be a McDonald's guy over Burger King. And now I am neither. And buy or sell a pedigree through thumbtacks or an F5 on barbed wire. I'm going to go with the move where I'm not falling face first down onto something very, very sharp. So I will say an F5 onto barbed wire. I'd rather tear up my back, which will eventually heal, than go blind. Dry Chicken, Twilight Zone Edition. Buy, sell, or rent MJF as a white meat babyface. Vince McMahon retires as the CEO in 2016. John Cena as a monster heel in 2011. John Cena as a monster heel in 2011. Bulu, thank you for the $10, man. He has been dropping some serious love. Look at this, another one. $10 super chat from Bulu. Buy or sell Miller's Crossing or Barton Fink, better underrated Coen Brothers film. Again, I didn't see either one. Was No Country for Old Men a Coen Brothers film? Because I definitely saw that one. That was a fucking great movie. Keith Cross, $12 super chat. Champion against champion, Charlotte against Becky on Raw to pop a rating. I don't know that there's any match that can pop a rating for them the way that you think. They've given away some pretty big matches on TV recently, and none of them really seem to gain any traction. I mean, they gave us the Bloodline against the New Day a few weeks ago, and I mean, I guess that did okay, but I don't know that I would be burning through, you know, too many more big matches here. Nothing worse than Dry Chicken. No Undertaker. I'm glad about that. He is too busy with Pitbull. Bulu Fatulu sent a $10 super chat. Buy or sell Miller's Crossing, or I said that already. Oh my goodness, look at this. Bulu is all over the place here. Better Michael Douglas movie, Falling Down or Wall Street? Wall Street. Solomazzo, you're finally going to watch Joker by the time GTA 6 comes out. Probably. Chris Auditor, thank you for the five, man. Hi, Solomazzo. I hope you are well. Brock Lesnar being the one to end Roman Reigns' dominant title reign does not sit well with me, to be honest. I mean, the problem is that they have done a very poor job, I think, of building up anybody else. Outside of the two names I mentioned with Lesnar and McIntyre, You know, I thought maybe they could build to Roman and Big E, and Big E being the one, but now Big E is the WWE champion on the other show. They really have done a very poor job of plausibly building up someone else for that spot. Dry Chicken, I just got done watching the G1 Climax. The G1, for me, was a 7.5 out of 10. I disagree with the A-Block Finals booking decision, he says. Jamin John, is Cena coming back to get his revenge on Brock for his assault at SummerSlam? No. I don't think Cena cares. You're talking about a guy who would lose his championship and come out on TV the next day smiling. I don't think he cares that Brock F5'd him off the air. Bulu Solomonster, would you agree Red Dead Redemption 2 is the greatest video game ever made? Like many have been saying, sorry for all the questions. I have not played Red Dead Redemption 2. I feel like all of Bulu's questions are making me feel really bad because I feel like there's this whole world of movies and video games and TV shows that I've never watched and I've never played and I've never heard of. I feel very sheltered now in my life. Like, maybe I'm working a little too hard. I'm missing out on all this other fun stuff. The Barf Nuggets, 24. Use the random name generator website and see if the name you generate is better than the name Von Wagner. I might have to do that this weekend. I don't have it in front of me now, but I might consider doing that this weekend, actually. Luis Hernandez, thank you for the 5. Solomonster is the only podcaster that had signs in Saudi. Fans giving free marketing like that shows why Solomonster is a boss. I have to say, that was, for me, that was the coolest part of the show. To see that, you know, it's just very cool. To see that you have people watching and listening from all parts of the world like that. I mean, I get emails and stuff, but when you're watching live and then it kind of hits you, like that chair hitting Mr. Inferno there, it's a really cool feeling. So that definitely put a smile on my face, as did that super chat. Professor John Gotti, I got to shout him out yet again. Thank you for the $150 bomb from earlier. You are always appreciated here. Keith Cross. Wow. Keith Cross dropping over $60. The timings tonight was great. A pay-per-view after work on a Thursday has been a great experience over here in the UK. I also finally get to watch a Solomonster live stream. What were your thoughts on the crowd tonight? As I mentioned earlier, I thought the crowd was great. The crowd was a lot more vocal than they have been on the past Saudi shows. I think they really enhanced the show. Loose Cannon with the 5. I think Sweet Saudi feels like a good show, so enjoyed it. And today is October 21st, so happy Back to the Future Day to you, Solomonster. I did not know that today was Back to the Future Day. Back to the Future Part 2 is my favorite of the 3. I would go 2, 1, and then 3 in that order. Jamin John, why The Rock in 99 wrestled with a t-shirt and track pants in main event matches, notably the I Quit match, empty arena match, also against Mankind. He had gyno surgery on his chest, and so he was still recovering from that. That was the reason why. That was the reason that was always reported as far as why he was wearing the tracksuit. Simi Valley, if you had to take a guess, who do you think will be the first AEW star to jump to WWE and be a success in WWE? Jumping to WWE and being a success in WWE are two very different things. I don't know. I can't tell you who would be a success. Brian Cage seems like somebody who is not completely thrilled about the spot he's in right now in AEW, but I know he had, you know, issues before with WWE. So I don't know if he would be so quick to jump there. We're going to see AEW names jump. It's inevitable. I don't think it's going to happen right away. And some of them are under contract for a while yet, so I think it'll be some time. I can't answer that honestly because WWE's track record is so herky-jerky. I can't sit here and honestly tell you I know. that I believe so-and-so is going to jump and end up being a major star. I could not have predicted the level of success that AJ Styles would have had, jumping over as an Impact name and finding the success that he did in WWE. It was very cool to see. But if you're that good, as he is, they say the cream rises to the top. That's what happened with AJ Styles, but you know, for so many years, they wouldn't even look at talent from Impact. And then AJ comes in, and he's wrestling championship matches within a few months. Not everybody is going to come into WWE from somewhere else and get that kind of treatment. Get the AJ Styles push that he got in 2016. I can't give you really an honest answer. I don't know. Johnny Franceschi, or Chesky. We'll say Chesky. Best season of Seinfeld. I lean towards season 5, but there's obviously a strong case for season 4. Which season had the contest? Because I'd probably go with that one. Nothing worse than dried chicken. Do you think dried chicken without flavor could be a tag team? By the way, I'm very much a female with poor grammar. Yes, I think it could be... I think you would make an amazing pairing, actually. Tag team, or you managing him, him managing you. Cameron Spencer, I'm a huge Sanity fan, and they should still be relevant today. No need for retribution if they use Sanity correctly. What are your thoughts? I was never a big Sanity fan myself, like you were, but I do think that they were given a raw deal when they got called up, and you're right. There would never have been a need for a retribution-type faction. Sanity was similar in some ways. It could have worked. They never really had a shot. They were never given a chance. Devin from New Jersey 2000. Buy or sell, who was more toxic on WWE television, Michael Cole in 2011 or Stephanie McMahon during the Authority era? They were both very counterproductive. Yeah, Michael Cole is supposed to be the lead announced voice on the show. He's supposed to have some credibility. And he had none during that period. That hurts the product. But Stephanie, you know, she can be good in doses. But she was just so... You talk about channel-changing heat. You talk about toxic. I probably would go with Cole still. But it's close. It's close, I will say. Dried chicken... The Hardy Family Office and New York Giants have something in common. They are unwatchable. The truth is the truth, and the truth hurts. Can't argue that. Jamin John, where is the location of the Rudy Poo Bridge? Is it at Know Your Role Boulevard or Candy Ass Lane? Or Jabroni Drive? I always thought it was at the intersection of Jabroni Drive and Know Your Role Boulevard, but I don't have my Waze in front of me. I don't have my Google Maps, so don't quote me on that. Ashway, so glad to be live on the stream. Keep up the good work and stay safe. And the Nerve Ensemble. The Nerve Ensemble, do you see WWE signing Jordynne Grace? No, I think Jordynne Grace is under contract for a while with Impact. I think she's pretty happy there. I think certainly if she wants to work with AEW talents, you know, since there's a working relationship there, she wouldn't be able to do that if she went to WWE. I'm just following her intermittently on social media. I don't get the impression that she's itching to jump to WWE. You'd have to ask her. I certainly have not seen or read anything that would, you know... indicate that's the case. Lakers, Pats, no, I don't give a shit. But thank you for the super chat. Khalid with the $5. I think that building characters and a compelling stories is the best way to pop a rating, not randomly putting on great matches. What do you think? Compelling stories are very important. Compelling characters are very important. Compelling promos are very important. The key word is compelling. Those are all very important. The matches are also important. I agree, they are not the most important thing. The problem is WWE does not give us a lot of compelling television. There are compelling stories here and there, but that is the issue that they have run into for a very long time now. Fawaz dropping the $22 super chat. Hey, buddy, glad you love the sign. Here he is. Here's the man of the hour. I'm so happy this sign will always be special to me because we made the deal about the sign when I talked to you for the first time. I am the one and only Saudi source. Ladies and gentlemen, the man of the hour himself, Fawaz. He is the man who brought the Sound Off sign to the show. And as he said, he told me a long time ago that he was going to do this. And when I was taking phone calls more often, he would call in. We've talked on the phone here on the streams, and he's given me some updates from Saudi Arabia on some of the shows. So I'm glad he's tuned in, and I'm glad that you got that sign on TV. Because I'm sure he put a lot of work into it as well. So I have to thank him again. Fawaz, you made my night with that. You made my night with that sign. Thank you, brother. Jeff Price, great show, Solid Monster. Question. With Finn Balor having lost two big back-to-back matches and Vince never being behind him, does he join AEW soon? I don't see him leaving anytime soon. I don't see it. I think they're going to have to really lean into him on Raw. They drafted him to Raw. They're going to need big stars on Raw. It does them absolutely no good to kind of bury this guy in the mid-card. So he lost to Roman. He lost here in the King of the Ring finals. He's not buried. It's not a death sentence for him. He is still over. A lot of people like him, but they're going to have to really start strengthening him so that they can have another bona fide main event star at the top of the card on that brand. What good does it do to draft him onto the other show and then just keep him stuck low down on the card when this guy could be one of your top three or four names on the entire show? It does not do them any good. So I actually think that there's bigger things for him in the future. I don't see him jumping anywhere right now. Bulu Fatulu, Solid Monster, I'm on season 5 of The Shield. And I truly hate Captain Kavanaugh, Forrest Whitaker's character. I am rewatching The Shield for the first time since I watched it all those years ago. And I am midway right now through season 3, and I am loving it. One of the best shows ever made. So I am looking forward to getting to season 5, but I'm not there yet. And I think when I'm done with this, I might start Breaking Bad from the beginning and do that over. Because season 5 of Breaking Bad is some of the best television I've ever seen. Bar none. Joshua Carlos, Roman Brock in Hell in a Cell or a cage? That way, no wonky finish. I don't think it needs to be inside a cage. You know, we've already seen them in a cage. They did a cage in Saudi Arabia a few years ago. Ghostros123 just dropped $5. No message. Just showing some love and support here on the stream. Ghostros, thank you for the $5. And there it is. Just as I acknowledge him as the tribal chief here on the stream, it pops up on screen. Thank you, Ghostros, and thank you everybody else who dropped all that super chat love here on the stream, from the good professor on down to everybody else. It makes a young lad feel good. All the work, all the time. The Wire, everyone is shouting The Wire at me. I am going to watch The Wire. Yes. I am going to watch The Wire. The Wire is another one that is highly praised. I will. That's another one. I will watch The Wire. I don't know when I will start. I want to finish The Shield again first, but I will watch The Wire at some point. No King Balor, says Eddie Chaos. No King Balor. He's still a prince. But all the people saying buried and, you know, it's just, you're being very premature. He's not buried. The demon is buried. The demon is dead. I will never look at the demon the same way again. But Finn Balor is not buried. All right, Bulu and everybody else, Bulu especially, I think Bulu is one of our MVPs tonight. Thank you for all the support. And I'm going to be back with you actually tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is Rampage. So it will not look Armed Anderson. Got to put your hands up for Armed Anderson. I'm not armed. That's a super chat from Dried Chicken. The most goriest horror movie you ever watched, he said. I watched a movie called The Descent many years ago. That was, I remember that being pretty gory. If not that, it had to be probably one of the Saw movies. I mean, take your pick. The one where, it might have been part three, where there was like brain surgery somebody had to do on somebody's like skull that they opened. Yeah, that got to me. And I remember I had to leave the theater and run to the bathroom. I was dry heaving. I thought for sure I was just going to, nothing happened though. I think I was just too hot though. I was wearing my coat in the theater. I was like sweating bullets. And then I watched that. I hadn't eaten anything. That was a bad combination. Hostel, that's right. Hostel was another one. Probably that one. Probably one of the Saw movies, though. Griga, at Comic-Con, I was able to take a picture and get an autograph with RVD. It was awesome. NYC was awesome. Yes, NYC can be awesome. Or it can be very annoying sometimes. Too much traffic. No place to park. I will be back live tomorrow night, though, after Rampage, 11 o'clock. It's not a double stream. We'll talk AEW. I mean, you want to drop messages and super chats about whatever, that's fine. But we'll talk Rampage tomorrow night. And then back on Sunday, episode 727. Then got another Dark Side of the Ring review on Rob Black and XPW that's going to be coming up. So a lot of content yet to come. I hope you will come back here tomorrow night and join me live. And don't forget, my Halloween Kills review is up. So if you missed it, it is up there for you. If you're wondering my thoughts on the movie, should you see it? Should you not? What was the good? What was the bad? It's all up there. I'll see you guys tomorrow night for the Rampage stream. Take care, guys.